The following talk, entitled The Angelic Hosts by Jeffrey Hodson, is presented by the Theosophical Society in America.
The existence of at least 9 orders of angels, variously named. One list gives them as follows. Angels, archangels, thrones, dominations, princedoms, virtues, powers, seraphim, and cherubim. 9 orders in all. The theosophical view includes but greatly extends the usual Christian approach. The angelic hosts are, for example, also regarded as engineers in the great powerhouse of the universe, of which the sun, physical and superphysical, is the generating plant. They are also regarded as builders of all the forms of nature. This doesn't conflict, really, with our familiar Christian view, because to each of those 9 orders, a special function is assigned. Each have their characteristic appearance and place in the divine economy by which the universe is formed and sustained. The theosophical view of that universe has always been that to which modern science is now leading human thought. For example, theosophy has taught that the universe consists of electrical energy, constantly flowing electrical forces on innumerable frequencies. Vast currents of power arising within a central source, which, if we like, we may term God, and flowing out into the universe. And over each of the major currents of cosmic power, lofty intelligences preside, serving, yes, as engineers, if that isn't materializing the concept too much. Shall I say, serving as directors of creative energy, distributors of the form-producing force and vitalizing power of the universe. And it is these intelligences, which we call the angelic host, which are the subject of our study this afternoon. Let us first of all look a little more closely into the modern scientific view of matter and the universe. How are they now regarded? Simply stated, all substance is now said to be composed of units of electricity of differing polarities, and the structure of all atoms is at present regarded as being the same. their shape, if we are going to admit of a form comprehensible to the mind at all. And we are warned against trying to make models. Nevertheless, the shape of the atom is now conceived as being spherical, and the mass is concentrated at the center, which we call the nucleus. And it is the fission of the particles at the nucleus which has resulted in the release of atomic energy, as we call it. And that nucleus at the center and heart of every atom is found, as far as we've gone up to now, to be composed of particles called neutrons and protons. Bear with me, please, whilst I go over what is probably familiar to you all, though possibly a little difficult to some. It's important. The nucleus of the atom is now thought to be surrounded by an electrical field formed of a planetary system, largely of negatively charged particles. And these, as you know, are called electrons. And these electrons are moving in round or elliptical paths round the central nucleus, somewhat as the planets are moving round the sun. In fact, to the lay mind at any rate, one of the wonders of the revelation of modern science is that here, in the inconceivably minute unit of which the whole universe is composed, we find a form which represents and reproduces in miniature that of the solar system as a whole. Enlarge the sun with wheeling orbs, the planetary homes. In miniature, the atom, with central nucleus and wheeling electrons, moving in orbit round the atomic sun, if I might use such a term. It's a thrilling thought, really. And the whole universe, yes, is regarded as being composed of such atoms. And every atom known up to now has consisted of combinations of these basic electrically charged particles. And so, the apparently solid universe is not solid at all. It consists of waves and particles of universal electrical energy. A new term came into existence for them, wavicles. For in a manner they are both waves and particles. And so, apparently solid matter really consists of waves and particles of electrical energy. Now, this is of tremendous interest to the theosophists, for theosophy throughout the ages has taught precisely this. In other words, of course, for instance, that all matter is crystallized light. Matter is frozen energy, say the occult scientists of all ages. But they go one or two steps further. We're going to follow them now. What else do they say? These who probe behind the outer appearance into the life and force within. They say this, that this flowing electrical energy, now this will be a little difficult, this flowing electrical energy is imbued with intelligence. It's not a blind force at all. It has its own intelligence by which it operates. Let me quote from an occult book. Theosophy teaches of but one indivisible and absolute omniscience and intelligence in the universe. And this intelligence thrills through every atom and infinitesimal point throughout the whole cosmos. There is intelligence and design in the action of seemingly blindest forces. I'm still quoting from a book written in the 1880s, The Secret Doctrine. Each particle, whether you call it organic or inorganic, is a life, the breath of heaven, or rather the breath of life, is in every animal, and every minute speck, and all mineral matter. And this breath of life is defined as cosmic electricity, the force that formed the universe. The inner soul of such manifestation as light, heat, sound, adhesion, and the spirit of electricity, which is the life of the universe. Magnificent utterance, made long ago. Can that also be compared and allied with the forward movement in modern thought? Indeed it can, for some scientists now declare the presence and activity throughout all nature of an active, directive intelligence imbued with aim. Wherever vitality exists, they say, there is aim, the bent bow of purpose in nature. And nature is now viewed as energy, fashioned into worlds, patterned variously for every stick, stone, and bit of life. And evolutionary attainment is the flowering of the aim, the drive and the purpose of which are innate within and part and parcel of every atom and every cell. Such is a view of the world to which we are now coming. And nature, yes, and man, are now described as a stream of creative continuity with aim. A very great advance. So we have the concept then of a universe of electrical force manifesting and operating according to some cosmic aim, purpose, plan. Thus far, we are in the domain of acceptable ideas, but now we're going to step beyond it. Our next step in thought, no scientist, as far as I know, has taken this next step yet, though Gustav Stromberg, in his Soul of the Universe, comes very near to it. What is it? It's this. that in addition to a universal directive intelligence throughout nature, as Professor Arthur Compton calls it, there are individual embodiments of that intelligence. Beings, individual intelligences who know the aim and exist but to assist in its fulfillment. And it's these intelligences in nature who are none other than the angelic host, called in the East by their Sanskrit name, Devas, D-E-V-A-S, Devas, meaning shining ones, and aptly describing their wonderful, radiant, self-lumined appearance. And it is these who are behind, as the directors of the forces and laws and processes of nature, all of which are gradually being expressed and fulfilled under their direction as supervisors and engineers. For Theosophy teaches there are no blind forces in nature. Everywhere there is law, everywhere intelligence, and everywhere, down to the smallest, minutest speck of life, individual intelligences. Thus, from within the life and the fourth aspect of nature, the angelic host assists the orderly, harmonious progression to a higher evolutionary stage of all created beings and things. Now repeat that. That's basic, I think. From within the life and the force aspect of nature, the angelic host assists the orderly, harmonious progression to a higher evolutionary stage of all created beings and things. And this orderly progression occurs according to the aim or purpose inherent in nature, or as we say more theosophically, according to a divine plan. Now those are the fundamentals. Now let us step frankly into the presence of these beings and see what is known and taught about them. Now from here on, I'm going to ask the kind pardon of our non-theosophist visitors, because I'm going for 5 minutes or so to go into the more technical aspects of this subject, for there are gathered here some 100 or more theosophists from different parts of the United States of America. And we are studying these things together in the relative privacy and seclusion of this beautiful headquarters with its surroundings. And we are spending our days together, we theosophists here, contemplating these things, trying to understand them to the end of more intelligent living and therefore more helpful and happy living out in the world. And so again I'm going to quote from The Secret Doctrine by H.P. Blavatsky. You won't find it so very hard. Thrillingly interesting, I think. Just listen. The great archangels are the collective host of spiritual beings, the angelic hosts of Christianity, the Elohim, that's the God, and messengers of the Hebrews, who are the vehicle for the manifestation of divine or universal thought and will. They are the intelligent forces that give to nature her laws. And these hierarchies of spiritual beings, through which universal mind comes into action, is like an army, a host, truly, by means of which the fighting power of a nation manifests itself, and which is composed of army corps, divisions, brigades, regiments, and so forth, each with its separate individuality or life, and its limited freedom of action, and limited responsibilities. Important point now, each contained in a larger individuality to which its own interests are subservient, and each containing lesser individualities in its turn. Now that's the heart of the subject. For the whole solar system is really a unit, like our body, and all the individuals in it, angels and men, are as centers, organs, cells in that solar unit or body. And these individuals are in a hierarchical or graded order. And just as a physical human body is composed of atoms, cells, types of tissue, organs, nerve centers, and brain, so the hosts of the angels are each part of one supreme being, and the lesser are components of the greater. Each individual nature, spirit, and angel is united in consciousness with a larger angel, and so on and on, up to the archangels, who contain and unite within themselves all the beings in that hierarchy of which they are the head. And there are 10 of these hierarchies, each with its archangel head. And these are the mighty spirits before the throne, the Sephiroth, the archangels of the face of God, 10 in number, almost at one with the supreme deity. And under each of them, in graded orders, hierarchies of lesser and lesser beings, right down to the little nature sprites who are concerned with physical nature herself. Or to put it another way, just as an atom or an electron, yes, I could say, couldn't I? Just as an electron is part of an atom, and an atom in its turn is part of a cell, which is part of an organ, which is part of the whole body within which it is contained. So, fairies, angels, higher angels, and archangels are all united in the one supreme Lord. And each angel includes within its life and consciousness hosts of lesser beings, down to the little nature spirit and the infusoria. And behind all the apparent diversity, there is a unity of power, life, and consciousness which acts as a whole, none being able to act individually. And the whole of the 10 hierarchies culminate in and are part of one all-inclusive being, the solar deity, who is the synthesis of all. I repeat that. The whole of the 10 hierarchies of archangels and angels culminate in and are part of one all-inclusive being, the Solar Logos, the supreme deity of our universe, its all-wise creator and king of kings. And I suppose if we allowed our thoughts to reach out, the same principle would extend to larger groupings of solar systems, into larger cosmoi, and on until the thought is led to one all-inclusive cosmic deity within which all is contained. One power, one life, one consciousness manifested through innumerable systems, worlds, intelligences, and beings. A glorious and exalting concept, both of deity and of nature herself. Now, let us look at the whole question from a slightly different point of view. Regarding the universe, perhaps, as a mighty temple, and that behind the visible temple of the universe, there exists its invisible counterpart. Within the outer temple is the one divine life and its countless hosts of ministers of innumerable orders and degrees. And supposing we could pass the physical doorway of this temple of nature, so beautiful all around us, as is possible, what should we find? We should find a basis of fact for this scriptural and theosophical teaching of the existence of the angelic host and for the folklore of the nations of the world. Some of you will each have had your own experiences, no doubt, elevated on occasion by some experience, a work of art, the line of a poem, an uplifted moment, to stand on a mountaintop, to watch a sunset or a dawn. Something from the human heart, reciprocated in full, exalting the consciousness out of the limitations of this flesh, this tomb of matter, till that is freed and released and we know the life within. What then is found? Each would express their vision splendid, I suppose, in their own way, as so many have done. Let me suggest one boundless ocean of force, formed of innumerable streams, one boundless ocean of life, formed of innumerable innumerable lives. One boundless ocean of light, formed of innumerable rays. One mighty intelligence, active through innumerable intelligent beings. Hierarchical orders of intelligences, cosmic, solar, planetary, and on a single globe, orders of angels who preside over different aspects of life, of consciousness, and of nature. Great gods of landscape, of ocean, lake, forest, and mountain peak and range. All these have been seen and known and found. As also archangel and angel directors of every law, of every process and force throughout all nature, and taking in hand some substance, a grain of sand if you like, all found to be alive, pulsing with the divine presence, pressing outwards to fuller and fuller self-expression. And all that pulsing power and presence, the vehicle for intelligence, operative everywhere throughout the created world. And of substance, divided as it is into earth, water, air, and fire, there will be found an order of archangels, angels, and nature spirits associated with each. Those with earth, landscape, mountain peak, those with water, those with air, the upper air being filled with countless hosts of shining beings, as also the subtile element of fire, omnipresent behind the veil of nature's visible form. Let me try and paint a word picture of one such. Supposing thus, within our eye open, we did succeed in penetrating the veil which hides the inner life and power normally from our view, and faced perhaps a mountain peak. What might we see? We would probably see a great angel, a landscape angel, presiding over the evolving life in the mineral and the plant kingdom in the vast region below. High, some thousands of feet up in the heaven above the central peak, there we would probably see a veritable God in majesty, in stature tall, up to 60 and 80 and 100 feet, the central form. Godlike, majestic, powerful, beautiful. A human form, yes, for the archetype is the same in the kingdom of the angels as in that of man. The head, therefore, set gloriously and nobly upon the shoulders, the brow lofty, broad, the eyes ablaze with power, and the whole form pervaded and surrounded with outflowing radiant energies, flowing outwards in waves and eddies and vortices for hundreds and hundreds of yards on every side in brilliant hues, the colors changing with the change of consciousness and thought. And from shoulders and head particularly, uprushing flame-like powers, sometimes assuming a crown-like form, so that the majestic being appears regal, crowned with a golden, fiery crown, set with jewels flashing, each jewel an angelic idea. And thus poised, gazing down, perhaps one hand pointing down to the mountain's mass below, and through it and directed, currents of energy, electric, vitalizing, quickening the sleeping consciousness buried in the mineral kingdom there. Hardly responsive yet to external stimuli, God leaps in the mineral. Then, as a result of this quickening through the ages, that life stirs in its sleep, later enters the plant kingdom of nature. God dreams in the plant. And the great lords of the plant kingdom of nature continue the awakening process until higher sensitivity is achieved and the animal kingdom is entered. God stirs and utters sound in the animal. And ultimately, still under angelic aid and supervision, that life which has made the long pilgrimage through aeonic time, through minerals, plants, animal, becomes man, reaching their self-consciousness and able to utter words expressive of ideas. Behind all this, the ministering, quickening, awakening influence of the angelic host. And so a great Lord thus poised above a mountain peak maintains a constant, stimulating play of power into the mountain's mass below. On occasion it will dive in, disappear within its life, unified with the life in the mountain peak, stimulating it from within, then to reappear high above the peak. And sometimes the auric energies are outstretched like vast pinions, often edged as with a fiery glow, so that it looks like some godlike bird with its wings outstretched against the setting sun. And over each mountain peak, and still greater over every range, there are such beings, the landscape angels of our world. Above them, their seniors, below them, as I have said, in graded order, their subservient angels, down to the little nature sprites, concerned with the formation of mineral and organic forms. Such is one order, one type, concerned with nature herself. Others are concerned with the operating of the law of karma, of cause and effect. In man, seeing that no one is ever overpowered by adversity or intoxicated with benefit, administering the law to the greatest possible evolutionary progress. Others are embodiments of the divine consciousness, the resistless will of God, the white fire of God's own self, with the Archangel Michael at the head. Others embodiments of divine love, with healing grace and compassion, with Raphael at their head, the ministering angels of the world. And each of the religions of the world have a portion to them from the planetary reservoir, their power by which they operate. And so the great engineers of power are linked with the religious services. And when we thus appeal to the help of the angels in our churches, there is a response and a reality, though often invisible. Not always so, however. And each great nation of the world is similarly presided over by its archangel potentate, as Pallas Athene of ancient Greece and others of the nations of the world. Thus, the life current of the angelic host are all intimately associated with the very life of man. They are a reality. They are here and now within our reach, responsive to our thoughts and consciousness. And here, as I close, is the kind of burden of the theosophical teaching that, as this interrelation between the angelic host and man under the grace of God becomes more and more conscious on our side, the more effective it will be. The angel beside the bed of pain is no mere poetic fantasy. Believe me, angels of healing exist. There are ways of invoking them. Guardian angels who will watch over the young and the aged, they exist. And as we learn more and more about them, call upon and collaborate with them and the others in their orders and degrees, so will the collaboration be more efficient. We theosophists, this is my closing thought. We theosophists look forward, and some of us work for that day when the veil grows thinner between the inner and the outer world, and man's extrasensory powers become more and more active. We shall see and know these, our angelic brethren, and win their collaboration in building a new and fairer civilization in which brotherhood and peace and beauty will be enshrined. And some of us are inspired with the hope that in that day, angels will once more walk with men.